Shravanadasanadhyananmai bhavo anukirtanat natata sanikasena pratyatta tato grihan Shravanadasanadhyananmai bhavo anukirtanat natata sanikasena pratyatta tato grihan Shravanadasanadhyananmai bhavo anukirtanat natata sanikasena pratyatto tato grihan.
In this 27th verse and the 28th, or really it's the 27th verse, is the last verse that Krishna speaks to the Brajagopikas. He gives them some very strong advice, but along the same lines of going home. Shravanat, by hearing, darshanat, by viewing, having darshan, by viewing my deity in the temple, dhyanat, by meditation, mayi, on me, bhava anukirtanat, by subsequent chanting, not tata, in the same way, sanikarsena, by physical proximity, pratyata, please return, tata, therefore, grihan, to your homes. So you cannot develop love for me, Krishna is telling them, just by staying in physical proximity to me. Well, how does love arise? Shravanat, darshanat, dhyanat. By shravanam, by hearing, darshana, by seeing the deity, and dhyanat, by the subsequent meditating upon what one has seen and heard. By this process, meditating and subsequent chanting on it. By this process, bhava, love, is what comes, not by staying in physical proximity to me as you girls are now doing. So therefore, please go back to your home. This is Krishna's final advice to the gopis. And it's interesting also to note that in the 23rd chapter where Krishna 23rd chapter of the 10th canto where Krishna delivers the wives of the Vaidic Brahmanas, he uses the same exact verse, Shravanat Darshanat Dhyanam Mai Bhavo Anakirtanat Natata Sanikarsena Pratyata Tatogram. The exact same verse when the Dvija Patnis come to meet Krishna and to feed him also according to his desire, because he had sent the boys in the mission of begging food to the village of what is now called Bartral. And there's a very wonderful temple there called Bartral Vihari, where Krishna sent the boys, and then he met them. I'm not sure actually if that temple is the meeting place where Krishna actually met them by the Yamuna, on the borderline between Sri Vrindavan, Vrindavan and Mathura. Krishna met the wives of the Brahmins, and when he entered their hearts, this is Krishna's potency, he entered their hearts through their seeing him, because Krishna is so powerful, he entered their hearts through seeing him. They're seeing him. And there he embraced them. But then he told them to go home. And the process of associating with me, he said the exact same verse, Sanskrit, word by word, the process of attaining love for me and associating with me is through the process of Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu. Hearing about chanting about, meditating upon, and then subsequent the chanting about what one has heard. This is the process, and therefore you should go back to your home. So I'll read the two translations because they've been translated differently. It is by hearing about me. This is what the translation in the 23rd chapter. It is by hearing about me, seeing my deity form, meditating upon me, and chanting my names and glories, that love for me develops. This is the process. It does not develop by physical proximity. Therefore, Krishna said to the Dvijapatis, please go back to your homes. And to the gopis, the translation is slightly different. Transcendental love for me arises by the devotional processes of hearing about me, seeing my deity form, meditating on me, and faithfully chanting my glories. The same result is not achieved by mere physical proximity. So, same common advice, please go back to your homes. So the same advice is given to the Dvijapatnis and that is given to the Braja Gopikas. But there will be a difference in the response. The Dvijapatnis, the wives of the Brahmins, they were not happy to hear these words. They were satisfied just to remain in the forest as maid servants of the servants of Krishna, of Vanadevis, some of Vrindadevi's servants who make arrangements in the forest. They were happy to do that, and they thought they could not return home in any case. They wouldn't be accepted in their homes. They weren't happy, but yet when they heard these words of Krishna, they went back to their homes. But the gopis, upon hearing the same exact words, they did not return to their homes. Here is the comment of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur to this verse, the 27th verse in the 29th chapter. The Braja gopis thought, they replied rather, why do you have such thoughts? Remember, Krishna's words and his meaning was like trying to hold back a tidal wave. Why do you have such thoughts? We did not come for physical contact with you. Rather, we understand from the words of Gauga Muni that you are Narayan himself. Krishna had just said that, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment, that I am Lord Narayan, and therefore your dealing with me it is not apatya at all. You are the supreme. Krishna had said, I am the ultimate husband of everyone, the ultimate shelter of everyone. So there's nothing illicit or improper, and you're staying with me. That was Krishna's welcoming, the interpretation of Krishna's words that are welcoming the gopis. So here the gopis say, they use the same type of shastric argument, quoting the words of Gauga Muni, saying, we have understood from the words of Gauga Muni that you are Narayan himself. Thus we have come with the desire to attain devotion to you. Therefore, let us stay here tonight and let us serve your lotus feet. Fearing this statement, Krishna speaks this verse in response to his last one. It is well known that the pure devotees do not even desire the perfections of samipya, transcendental wealth, salokya, residence on the same planet, or other benefits, but rather they desire to always hear and chant about the Lord. As devotees, you must have heard about this. Krishna is thinking this, and he's countering the possible words of the gopis with that comment. Or the alternative meaning is, the processes such as hearing about me do not give rise to intense conjugal love bhava as much as direct contact with me. The exact opposite meaning, saying yes, you should stay here and stay here and have contact with me. Therefore, do not go home, but go to the place with no houses, no homes, which is the groves of Vrindavan. So that's how Krishna ends his words to the brother Gopikas. But they did not hear, really they did not hear the double meanings. They heard that Krishna was telling them to go home. And their hearts were broken because they had given up everything to attain the shelter of Krishna, to attain the association of Krishna. They didn't care about this life. They didn't care about the next life. Their love was so complete, so full. They only wanted his association. So Sukadeva Goswami, in text 28, he gives some description. He says, hearing these unpleasant words spoken by Govinda, that you don't need my personal association to gain me, you just need to hear and chant to gain me. So hearing these unpleasant words, which were tacitly telling them to return to their homes, hearing these words, these unpleasant words, not giving pleasure to the heart, spoken by Govinda, the gopis became morose. They became depressed. They became extremely sad. Their great hopes were frustrated, and they felt insurmountable anxiety. What was their great hope at this point? They wanted to be with Krishna. They wanted to embrace Krishna. Their hearts were full of pure, transcendental, not of this material world, without the slightest tinge of lust. Their hearts were only full, overwhelmed with the desire to engage in a conjugal relationship with Krishna. This is the adirasa, as explained by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. This is the primal relationship. This is what causes Krishna pleasure. This is what causes Krishna to maintain existence, practically speaking. It is the love of the gopis. So, this love of the gopis, upon being confronted with Krishna's indifference and resistance, did not diminish. It just shifted from exuberance, from hopefulness. It changed its shape to transcendental moroseness and sadness. We use the word transcendental because how can we know or describe the ecstasy they were feeling in the emotion of being turned away by Krishna, being turned back by Krishna. We cannot describe it, we cannot experience in it, but we can know that it is a transcendental, ecstatic moroseness that is bringing forth Krishna to appear in their consciousness. He's in front of them, he's always in their consciousness. He's there, engaging with them, always in different ways. For again, what purpose? To increase the churning of the rasa. So they push, and he resists. One can think of it something like martial arts even. If you learn Chinese martial arts, there's a pushing, and then there is a pulling back, and then what does this person do in the martial arts? He has to do something else. And this something else causes another form of ecstasy. They get depressed. They get morose. Why? Because they're feeling hopeless. Hopeless that Krishna is not accepting us. How is that possible? He's called us out here with the song of his flute, which was irresistible, and now he's not accepting us. So they become hopeless. what is the purpose of our existence? They become completely devastated, practically speaking. Here is the comment, the purport. The gopis did not know what to do. They went forward and Krishna went back and resisted them. They considered falling at Krishna's feet and crying for mercy. It was intolerable. The Dvijapatnis accepted Krishna's very good spiritual advice to chant and hear and worship the deity, meditate upon me. But there was no question of the Braja Gopis doing that because it was the insurmountable, unstoppable tidal wave of their love for Krishna that had mounted due to the... What causes a tidal wave? Any geographers? Underwater? Earthquake. So Krishna had caused an earthquake by the sound of his flute. That was the earthquake that caused the tidal wave of their love for him to break forward the bank of the rivers of the restraints that they had, their relationships. Previously, they wouldn't even look at Krishna, practically speaking, because they were in the constraints. The banks of their river, of their love for Krishna, were constrained by what their relatives would think, by their husbands, the other members of the village, the elders. But this earthquake had now been sent by Krishna, by his flute playing. And now the resulting tidal wave had broken the boundaries of the banks of the river of whatever it was that restrained them and had rushed to Krishna. And then Krishna said, yes, you have seen the forest, welcome, swagatam. Now it is time for you to go home. So they felt so hopeless. They felt, what are we going to do? We should throw ourselves at Krishna's feet. Our hearts are overflowing with love for him. They couldn't remain aloof. They couldn't go back to their homes. They weren't crying at his feet for his mercy. And they were, and all these thoughts were in their consciousness, making more rasa develop. And they were filled with anxiety. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment. They were stunned, not knowing what to do. The gopis could not see a reason for Krishna's rough words. Why were they rough? They sounded very polite, weren't they? They were religious, they were moral. How were they rough? They were completely unpleasant because they were contrary to the gopis' powerful, overwhelmingly powerful desire to love Krishna, to serve him in the conjugal mood. They felt that as horrendous, the worst possible thing, even though they were guised in politeness and morality and religiosity, they felt it as the greatest, roughest, harshest words. Because of their love. And because, or if we don't have that love, we cannot conceive of even how it's harsh. Well, why not? He gave them good instructions, good preaching, good advice. Or he was playing with them. Or he was testing them, or he was teasing them, or he was really sending them home as he was sending home the Dvijapatnis. But to the gopis, it felt completely harsh and rough because their desire was being spoken against, rejected by Krishna. There is nothing more painful than rejected love. When you finally, you have the courage to bring what is from the depths of your heart to the surface, and then it comes out. In this case, it hadn't come out of the gopis' mouths, but it came out in what form? In their rushing to see Krishna And how they were dressed too, that was a giveaway of what was in their consciousness. They were completely inappropriately dressed. They were upside down, their earrings, their bottoms were on the tops and the tops were on the bottom. This was like that, completely imperfectly, improperly, incompletely decorated. What was in their heart, the power of it was coming out, but not verbally. And Krishna wants to hear it in words. He wants to hear what is in their heart, the feelings that have been expressed by their rushing out. He wants to hear the words. He's so playful and naughty. He wants to hear them say it for the intimacy. This is the crooked dealings of love. These are the crooked dealings of Brajabhakti on the highest level. Krishna is acting in his own independent way to increase the rasa. The gopis could not see a reason for Krishna's rough words. He promised them. He called them out. He's rejecting them. And they were doubtful of the hidden affection in his unspoken words. Krishna's such a clever talker. He's saying all these things with the hidden meanings. Well, maybe he means, well, this is what it's like in these type of a dealings, even in this world. What does he really mean? What are they really saying? What are they really thinking? So they doubted by his actions the affection in his unspoken words. But due to the feelings of humility which arose from their sthayibhav, the gopis became morose and they became lost in thought. That person for whom we have neglected everything, our husbands, our parents, our families, our religious duties, our gravity. Gravity means allowing oneself to express the depth of feeling. We have given up our gravity. And now, what we have spoken indirectly previously to him through our glances, nothing more than that, practically speaking, now we have lost the depth of our speaking and we've expressed our feelings openly. We've neglected everything, our pride. And now, and our shame, and our fear. He is now neglecting us because we are not good enough for him. This is what they're thinking, great humility. Seeing their aspirations smashed to pieces, the gopis became very anxious, thinking, should we make a show of humility, of very humbly holding to Krishna's feet and crying piteously, begging to remain here? Or should we try our best to remain sober and feigning aloofness? Oh, he's going to play this one? He's playing the indifference card? So we should also play the indifference card. Okay, if you feel like that. We just actually came here to see the forest. It was such a nice night and we had never seen the moon look like this before. And we were wondering what the deer did in the forest when the moon is so full. And now that we've seen that, oh, we're satisfied and we can go home. Bye, Krishna. But what was in their hearts? What was in Krishna's heart? So they could do the same thing. So they were thinking like that, feigning aloofness because they were talking to themselves, or somehow we could force our mind to appear and stay grave, or perhaps we should just simply give up our lives, either in his presence right here, or we should secretly drown ourselves in the Yamuna, because the reality is, without Krishna, without loving Krishna, we have no reason to be alive. If he doesn't accept us, we have no life. So we might as well just drown ourselves in the Yamuna. Then again, how will we be able, as he ordered us, to eat the vomit of service to our husbands and other relatives? How can we remain ourselves? How can we maintain ourselves? Where will we go? What will we do? They were caught with these conflicting alternatives. None of them was satisfying, because the only thing that would satisfy them was to be with Krishna. The gopis were like chataki birds who upon Krishna poured the poison of his flute vibration. The chataki bird, the chataka bird, what is it looking for? Oh, the chataki bird. Is this the rain cloud bird? That's usually called the chataka. I guess this is the feminine one. Yes? But instead of getting the water of nourishment, we drank the poison of Krishna's flute vibration. We knew it was coming from him, and we became overwhelmed, and we trusted him, and we willingly drank that poison without hesitation. Did Krishna suddenly give up his normal quality of being easily approachable? He's always, up to this point, been with his eyes, with his glancing, by his coming to us now and then, because there is an unspoken language in these dealings, where people know, yes, he's encouraging me, he's encouraging me, she's encouraging me. The language of love. And now he's called us, and now he's given us his flute music, and now he who was always so encouraging and approachable is now unapproachable. It must be because we're not good enough. Text 29. Their heads hanging down and their heavy, sorrowful breathing drying up their reddened lips, the gopis scratched the ground with their toes. It was like they were in this impossible situation due to their love for Krishna and his way of dealing with them, that they just wanted to be swallowed up by the earth and disappear within it, and therefore they were scratching the ground to make a chasm, a cavern open up in the earth so that they could jump within. The gopis scratched the ground with their toes, and tears flowed from their eyes, carrying their cudgel and washing away the vermilion smeared on their breasts. It made a mark from the tears, from the cudgel. It was like a saw mark they felt. They were being sawed in half by Krishna. Just imagine. We can't imagine. But just imagine what love actually is, love for Krishna is. Placing oneself fully in the hands of our attraction to Krishna, and then Krishna can do whatever he wants. And indeed, that's what he's doing, whatever he wants. Thus they stood, silently bearing the burden of their unhappiness. Purport. The gopis felt, if Krishna has not been conquered by our love, then our love must not be genuine, because Krishna is conquered by love. So therefore our love must not be real. And if we cannot properly love Krishna, what is the use of our lives? their reddish lips were drying up because of the hot breathing that arose from their unhappiness. When the hot sun dries ripe red bimba fruit, dark spots appear on them and they grow soft. The beautiful lips of the gopi similarly changed in appearance. They stood silently before Krishna, unable to speak. So far, it appears as if the restraining wall of Krishna has stopped the tidal wave of the gopis' love from advancing. But I assure you, it's only momentary. This verse, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, expresses what the gopis experienced in their anxiety. Their lowered heads indicate the gopis' shame. They felt, we gave up our natural shyness at the invitation of prema. But now again, our shyness has returned. Prema has made us cast away our shyness, and such prema is praiseworthy. Prema is defined as that which controls the object of one's love. If Krishna, the object of our love, has not been conquered by our prema, our love, then our love must not be genuine. And if that is a fact, then what is the purpose of our abandoning all our shyness? In this way, the Braja gopis felt remorse and embarrassment, which was expressed in their faces. And Krishna is just looking at him as he has his flute in his hand in Vansibhat, under the wonderful Vansi tree, looking so charming and so beautiful, unlimitedly beautiful. Everything about Krishna's features are unlimitedly attractive. His youth, his toes, and especially his smile. So completely captivating. When we have our concept of God, of the Absolute Truth, it is usually quite vague. In that way, and this is the hope of the materialistic calculation, how the religions of the world can get along with each other. Just keep all the concepts of God very vague so you can say, well, this religion is true and also that religion is true, and they have their different traditions and they have their different beliefs and they have their different mythologies, and there's only one vague, blurry, supreme Lord. And because he's vague and blurry, he's not really attractive, especially not as attractive as the things of this world. And no love can actually exist for such a vague, absolute truth. Ishvara, God. Fear can exist. Otherwise, if you don't do what he says, the piano is going to fall on your head from above, or something horrible is going to happen and you'll suffer in hell and you won't get the fruits of enjoyment that comes from pleasing him. You won't go to heaven or you'll suffer in hell. Fear, yes, fear can exist. But fear and love are quite different entities and they cannot even coexist. So vagueness allows the concept of the all-powerful to be fearful and keep us in place. But love and Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are quite different. This concept of Bhagavan, Tatvam Yajnanam Adhyam Brahmeti Paramati Bhagavaneti Savite, and Krishna Stu Bhagavan Sayam, the concept of this all-attractive person, especially in Vrindavan, especially as he plays his flute in Vansivat and forcibly pulls the gopis. This, in case you haven't noticed, this concept is not vague. He has details, flutes, beauty, hair, curly, dark hair, earrings that reflect off of his cheeks, and a beautiful nose and lotus eyes, and the most charming smile. Not vague. And the gopis were in love with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. The sign of the gopis' shame is indicated by their scratching on the earth with their left big toe. The gopis thought, "Oh, Mother Earth, please open up so that we can enter into you." The gopis' sorrow and remorse are further described. The gopis' tears mixed with their kajal and fell in two parallel lines to smear the kunkum. It was as if their increasing torment of separation, like a saw, was cutting the gopis in two with those black lines. Krishna's rejection felt to them like a saw cutting them in two. Just glimpse of what love is. Just glimpse at the consciousness of the gopis. 30. Although Krishna was their beloved, and although they had abandoned all other objects of desire for his sake, he had been speaking to them unfavorably. We can say in our common experience how many times a day or a week or a month or a year or a lifetime have people spoken to us unfavorably, or someone that we thought that we loved didn't treat us properly. We can say to the gopis, just get over it. Based on our materialistic no-love concept of love. But the gopis were, as we hope we get the idea, that they are something different. They are the embodiment, the ashraya of love. They are the shelter of love. Love for Krishna takes shelter within them. So although Krishna was their beloved, and although they had been abandoned all other objects of desire for his sake, he had been speaking to them unfavorably. Nonetheless, they remained unflinching in their attachment to him. Stopping their crying, they wiped their eyes and they began to speak. Their voices were stammering. What does stammering mean? Unsteady, starting and stopping, like stuttering, not clear. How could they speak in clear voices when their emotions were so turbulent by the way Krishna was treating them? For what purpose? He's Rasaraj. He's the king of Rasa. And their relationship with him was so firmly fixed. It was unflinching. Obviously, they didn't think, well, there's always this one in the village that I could have a relationship with. Or maybe that one. Or maybe I'm thinking of this one. No. They were eternally, fully, inseparably connected, heart to heart, consciousness to consciousness with Krishna. They were the ultimate lovers of Krishna. So they're going to speak in 11 verses 31 to 41, and it'll be very interesting to hear their reply. First we'll hear the comment of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur to text 30. O gopis, what is the use of crying in the forest? Why don't you put a smile on your face and return home? He's a positive thinker. As if Krishna was shouting this in their ears, the gopis woke up from their dazed state and they began to plead with Krishna in these verses. That's the next 11 verses. The gopis address Krishna as Prishtam, which is in the Sanskrit of text 30. Prishtam priyataram eva pratibhashamanam Prishtam, their beloved. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura is going to tell something about the word Prishtam. On account of their previously having had frequent physical contact with him, he's called Prishtam. Yet still, without any reason, Krishna was now speaking as if just the opposite of a beloved, Priyataram, harshly saying such unfavorable things as you should go and serve your husbands. This would be impossible because, for Krishna's sake, the gopis had put aside all objects of material pleasure in such a thorough way that they could never again have any relation with them. The phrase sava kama navartita indicates that the gopis did not have even a trace of material lust or desire. Their desire to please Krishna was not based on kama, selfish material desire. That is Sukadev Goswami's intention by using the word sava in this verse. The statement that the gopis rubbed their eyes, which had been blinded with tears, implies they were thinking, now our end has come. Let us take a good look at Krishna's lotus face before we die. The gopis were agitated, thinking, alas, alas, even though we were supposedly dear to Krishna, and even though we have not committed any offense, how could he bring us to the stage of death? If it is imagined that the gopis were not upset, but rather they were thinking, because we have no suitable beauty or qualities, we are not fit to associate physically with Krishna, let us simply give him up. Sukadev Goswami states to the contrary that the voice was stammering with agitation. They were not at all thinking in that way. It may be said that in either case, we deduce that the gopis lacked pure love of Godhead, and thus they should have desisted, they should have stopped, they should have left, they should have gone home. This objection, however, is refuted by the word anuraktaha, implying that those who are blinded by ecstatic attraction, anurag, cannot tolerate logical arguments. In other words, the gopis were totally saturated with intense love for Krishna, and they were beyond any mundane considerations. Okay, we're going to soon enter into the world of the gopis' replies to Krishna. But first we'll pause and ask if there's any questions or comments. So, or if you want to add any of the commentaries or anything.
So did the Brahma Patnis do the right thing by going back home?
By the standard of their consciousness, they did the right thing because they did not have the qualification of the Braja Gopis. So that brings up an interesting point. Or maybe a sobering point, that one should not imitate. One should act in the proper way according to one's consciousness. There is a tendency to be imitative and think, this is the higher state and the higher thing to do, therefore they should have done that, and I should act in a higher way, and that will prove, or not prove, that will automatically put me on the higher state of consciousness. But that is not the way spiritual life works. So they acted properly according to their consciousness because they weren't actually Vrindavan Vasis in the sense they were residents of Vrindavan, but being on the borderline between Mathura and Vrindavan, they would have actually to attain the unique position of the Braja Gopikas is you have to take birth from the womb of a gopi. This is the standard. And you have to grow up in a particular way and you have to have a particular association, and you have to be born in a particular mood. Because if you have a birth as a Brahmin, and oh, we can understand it from the material platform, then the birth as a cowherd person is either inferior or at least different. So the Braja Gopis have a different type of feeling altogether. They have the feeling of he's one of us, that mamata. He's ours, he's one of us. There is no feeling of separation. He's one of us. He's our village friend. So that's part of the consciousness of the Braja Gopis. So what is the consciousness of the Braja Gopis like? We can talk like this, but of course it's not possible for us to understand. But that is the part that's missing, or a part that's missing on the level of the Dvijapatnis, the wives of the Brahmins. So therefore they cannot, they've acted properly because that's their consciousness. I'm sorry. The comment there, that was Krishna's words, and then
they didn't question these words, like, because he says seeing the deity is better than my physical proximity, but the deity and him are no different, supposedly. So they didn't question that.
So therefore, but they weren't happy by it. That's the point. They weren't made happy by it. We want to be with you. Just like with Gauridas Pandit in Khulna. He was missing Gaur-Nitai. They were about to leave his house. And Gaur-Nitai, Nityananda Prabhu and Gauranga Mahaprabhu, they said, okay, we have to leave, but we'll leave you deities. And they left, and they left deities. And then he said, no, no, I want you. I don't want deities. And they said, okay. So they, you know the story, how they went, and then they get on the, and then the deities got up. So that makes the point that the Lord and the deities are the same, that pastime, and they kept going back and forth. And was, why was Gauridas, why did they keep going back and forth? Because he wanted moving Gaur-Nitai. So, and even though there's no difference, there is a difference. It's a difference not of tattva, but of rasa. So, does that answer what you were asking? Because I'm not sure what you were actually asking. What they were realizing was that they loved him, but their love was not in, because he had entered their hearts. It's not ordinary. You can't understand what their consciousness is like. They didn't realize, you know, they were like this. They're way, 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 way up here. And we're way, 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 way down here. They had the ability to see Krishna. And they had the ability to, for Krishna, their love was so great that just by hearing about Krishna from the people of Braja who were wandering around, from the flower sellers and the this and the that, they had the ability to have so much love for Krishna that Krishna made an arrangement to pull them to him. And they were standing right in front of Krishna. And then Krishna, through their eyes, entered their heart and embraced them. So for us to say that their realization was like this and their realization was like that, one might think it was a little presumptuous. But I'm speaking about the Brahmana's wives. When I'm speaking about, so that's because there the Brahmana's wives are so up here compared to what we are, and we're so little, 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 that they had, Krishna was standing right in front of him. Krishna the person was right in front, they participated in his leela, in his personal presence. So they're so extraordinary. But yet we can say that their concept, how extraordinary it was that their consciousness was, it was still not on the same level as Braja Gopis, the Braja Gopikas, because of the mamata and association with the Nityasada Gopis and this and that. But that's what they wanted. You follow what I'm saying? No. Kind of. We can't make presumptions about their consciousness. That's what I'm saying. That they didn't realize the contradiction or something. They were in love with Krishna. Krishna had entered their hearts and embraced them, if I remember correctly. Any other questions? And if not, we shall go on.
We have a small comment on that question. I don't think there is any contradiction in Krishna's words. It's, if one does not have prema, then just by being in front of Krishna, it's not how one develops prema. One develops by performing bhakti, shravanam, kirtanam, dhyanam, darshanam, all these things. Because we have demons who were in front of Krishna and they did not develop prema. So that's what Krishna is pointing out. And the Brahmapatnis took it that, okay, we are not on the proper level, we still have to develop our bhakti. And the gopis, they thought, no, we already have it.
I'm not 100% sure they went through the intellectual processes of this, but it's good instruction for us.
Yes.
Looking at it just from the Leela level, they are accepting Krishna as the Supreme Lord, as their master, and they had to listen to him. Their love was not on the tidal wave level. That could not be stopped by any barrier, even Krishna's seeming words. And also, we could see how Krishna's mood was even different in dealing with both of them, because there's no double meanings when Krishna is speaking to the Dvijapatnis. He's not saying one thing but meaning another. But with the gopis, he's actually asking them to stay. That's his heart, actually, as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is revealing. He wants them to stay, and they're responding. And with them, the other ones he's suggesting. But interesting enough, he gave them association later on too. He gave the Dvijapatnis, he didn't cut them off, he gave them more association later on.
When?
Huh?
When?
During the Govardhan Leela type of things, because they were involved in performing the sacrifice, something like that. I can't remember the details. But he went back to the village to give association. Indeed, they did. But indeed, they did also. But Krishna arranged also that they would be, as you're saying, they would be accepted back. And also the gopis went back.
And not only went back,
he wanted them to preach. How is that one? Go out there and preach. Did you have a question or comment? Well, the Krishna, the gopis are ours, and Srimati Radharani is, she's Krishna's Ladini Shakti. She is Krishna's pleasure potency. This is the means that Krishna gets pleasure. And she is, you could say that she is the personification of the Ladini Shakti, or you could say the Ladini Shakti is the Shakti manifestation of Srimati Radharani. But this is how Krishna gets his pleasure. So it is impossible for a living entity to give Krishna pleasure unless he is connected with the Ladini Shakti, Krishna's internal potency. So at some point, we, as souls, now conditioned, being tiny, having the shelter of Krishna's Maya Shakti, are making the attempt at this point to change what our shelter is from the Maya Shakti, which gives us a sense of being the center of the universe, to getting the shelter of the internal energy, which is the shelter of the Ladini Shakti, the Ladini Samvit, which is the Shakti that gives Krishna pleasure, which places him in our consciousness in his correct position as the center. So that was a little bit of a technical answer to your question, but maybe it indirectly answered it, and you could figure out all the rest, because it's in there. So yes, we can't, our selflessness, but as soon as you get the shelter of the internal energy, the Dini Shakti, then you can be selfless. Before that, we struggle to be selfless, but we come up against the Maya Shakti, which always comes back to our false sense of who we are. So we're struggling to gain the shelter of the internal energy, and then when we get the proper blessings, when our sincerity is strong enough, then we gain that shelter, which makes us an actual devotee. Now we are aspiring. When we get the shelter of the internal energy, which is the platform of bhava, then we actually become devotees. And then we become actual sadhakas for prema bhakti, according to the analogies given in Nectar Devotion Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. That's when our sadhana begins, when we attain that stage, which we can attain by mercy and by endeavor, but by mercy. Yes, last question and then we'll go on.
In the spiritual world, all the rasas are equal in one respect. And then, but Prabhupada is actually, in a spiritual sense, the Kundila rasa is even more satisfying to Krishna.
Yes, clearly.
So is that as a result of the living entity surrender?
Yeah, you could say yes, actually. Because you could say that the Braja Gopis, on one level, the only fully surrendered souls. They surrender everything to Krishna. Everything, for His pleasure. But the point that Prabhupada makes, and he makes the other point, the comparative point, too, between the different rasas, is the point of, it's the point of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, basically, as opposed to the point of the Ujjanana Lamani. The Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu speaks about all the rasas as equal, because from the point of a conditioned soul who's trying to attain a relationship with Krishna, they're all like the Himalayan mountains. They're all so high, and we're like ants. So there's one peak that's a little bit bigger and another peak that's a little bit smaller, but from the point of view of an ant looking at the Himalayan mountains, there's practically no difference. But if you study the different peaks or the different rasas comparatively, you see that in fact some contain the others and some have aspects that the others don't have. And then by the comparative study like that, then the Kanjaka rasa, Sringara rasa, Madhurya rasa is the topmost. But your question was whether it's a matter of surrender, and yes, you can say that. You can say that love, you can see love just from that point of view of surrender. So surrender, or Sharanagati, we can say is the beginning of love, but we can also understand that it's not a stage that one surpasses. Now I'm finished with surrender and we go on, I move on to the next stage. Rather, one's surrender increases and increases, 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 and it can increase up to the point of the Braja Gopikas. Yes. In other words, you take on a rasa according to your desire, and you can also say, and that desire dictates what you surrender, or not what, because it sounds so silly in one sense, because that would imply that Nandamaraj and Madhya Soda are not surrendered, and that's obviously and ridiculous. So therefore, we have the balancing point. But yes, according to one's inclination, one goes to a point that's fully satisfying to one's actual self. One becomes what one already is, in a sense. Anything else on that? Is that all right? Okay. Let's move to the words of the gopis. So what verse is the first verse that they speak? Hmm? 31. Okay. The beautiful gopis said, "O all-powerful one." Now, I would also like to mention that these verses, 31 to 41, are sometimes called Pranaya Gita. There are different Gitas that are delineated in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. And this one is called the Pranaya Gita. And Pranaya is a stage after man, after of prema, because prema doesn't stop just as prema, it goes up all the way, 7 stages, I think, to Mahabhava. And Pranaya is a stage where one's love increases so much that one loses one's shyness. The intimacy of love is so close, so intimate. The lack of feeling of separateness has diminished so much, so the intimacy is so great that there is no shyness, and that which is on one's mind will come out one's mouth. So Krishna, through his dealings, has increased the stages that the gopis, or the rasa that the gopis are experiencing, to the level of pranaya by his design, by his rasarajnas. He's increased their love to the level of pranaya so that they will lose their shyness, so that they will speak what they are really desiring, which shouldn't be spoken of directly. So therefore, these verses where the gopis will do that to some degree are called the Pranaya Gita. And Krishna has masterfully done this by his... That's like what happens when there's some water flowing. Because we've been giving the analogy of the gopis' love to a tidal wave. So, of course, nothing of this world can stop a tidal wave, but Krishna is not of this world, so he can somewhat stop the tidal wave of the gopis' love by putting up an obstruction of his indifference. So what happens when there's water, a river, flowing, and an obstruction comes? What's an obstruction? When you place an obstruction up in a river, what is it called?
A dam,
yes. So what happens? The water stops and a lake is formed, but what happens to the water? it expands, but what happens to that? There's pressure put on it, right? So there's an increase in pressure and it expands. So that's what Krishna has done by putting up this obstruction of his indifference. He's increasing the pressure and increasing the rasa and increasing the stage of their love so that it will overflow and their natural tendency to not speak what is in the depths of their mind and expressly express what they're thinking in a conjugal way. And it's not at all material. It's all spiritual. It's not of this world at all, but this world is a reflection of it. And how poor the love is in this world. Because in the guise of love, it's only lust. And therefore, when we look at this dealing of the spiritual world, naturally, with our feet tending to be firmly planted in the experiences and the desires of this world, we may see love is lust, true love is lust, because that's all we know, but this has nothing to do with it at all. Nothing to do with the material experience of lust. This is the real thing. This is pure gold. And the lust is just only iron. So the beautiful gopi said, "Oh, all-powerful one." So there's a hint of their knowledge of his position. But he's all-powerfully pulled them with his flute. "You should not speak in this cruel way. Do not reject us who have renounced all material enjoyment to render devotional service to your lotus feet. Reciprocate with us, O stubborn one, just as the primeval lord Srinarayan reciprocates with his devotees in their endeavors for liberation. So they're not going to accept it. And this are the shy, cooperative ones speaking, who aren't exactly going to speak the depths. Their pranaya isn't going to be as deep, as full and overflowing as the other speakers later on. This is the shy ones. These are the cooperative ones saying, don't be like this. Srila Sridhar Swami gives meanings here. "O Duravagraha, O you who are independent, please reciprocate with us who are rendering service to your feet. Please don't reject us. It is a plea." There's no anger. A little bit. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Krishna is instructing us in religious principle while he himself indulges in all kinds of sinful activities. With this intention, the gopis speak this verse. The gopis said, "You should not speak such cruel words, since you are the son of Nanda Maharaj, who is famous everywhere for his religiousness." Rather, the gopis imply, "Only someone who has a reputation amongst everyone as a murderer might properly speak like this. Because, our dear Krishna, if you don't accept us, we will die. And you, who are claiming to be so religious, are going to be the one who has killed us by your not accepting us." See how their love is so pure, but still they're speaking a little indirectly. But see the nature of their love. If you don't accept us, you who are talking religious principles are going to be the most sinful, because we will die. The gopis continued, "Though we are numbering in the millions, you have fired your arrow-like words upon all of us, so that we will now give up our bodies and go to the abode of Yamaraj rather than going to the cowherd village. You have the cowherd village that you have advised us to return to. But you, on the other hand, can go back to Braja, taking with you the sinful reactions for murdering millions of women. If you don't want to be implicated in the sinful reactions of killing women, then you should reciprocate with us, because that's all they desire. You should reciprocate with us who have given up everything to serve your lotus feet. But," Krishna may ask the gopis, "my dear desirous ladies, have you come here to worship me because your husbands have not satisfied your lust?" Gopis, "O Duravagraha, O stubborn one, why are you doing this to us? You're acting so stubbornly." "O Duravagraha, Duravagraha, O stubborn one, the famous grammarian Panini says, avagraho vristi pati bandha. The proper usage of the word avagraha is to mean the stopping of rain. Thus the word divavagraha can only be explained as metaphorically comparing Krishna to something else, namely a rain cloud, which is faulty for not providing rain. You are stubbornly not giving us the rain of mercy, which is your association. Thus we get the meaning, Vishwanath says, O cloud that rains only poison in the form of first your flute, which has poisoned us with an incredible, overwhelming desire to run to you, forgetting everything else, and then from the same place where the poison of the flute has come, the poison of your words has come that is killing us. And you are like a cloud that gives rain because your complexion is shama, like a cloud. O cloud that rains only poison, even though you are far away, you, the Krishna cloud, are the friend of us chatuki birds. But today you happen to be raining poison. If because of drought you're withholding your rain, avagraha, you are not giving rain, then go ahead and don't give rain. We shall instead drink the poison you rain down and die. But we will not drink the water of the lakes of any other reservoir, even though they are close by. Indeed, you know this is our nature. Consequently, please do not reject us. If you have any sense of gratitude at all, don't reject us. Krishna, all gopis, the chataki depends on the cloud, as you have said, but the cloud does not depend on the chataki. For the cloud, it does not matter whether the chataki bird lives or dies. Virja gopis, all right, but you are not a lifeless cloud. Rather, you are the most exalted of Shiva's persons, just like Narayan himself. Therefore, you should act as Narayan acts. Narayana reciprocates with those who have given up everything. How? By awarding them liberation, because he's under the control of his devotees. But you do not reciprocate with us, who have renounced all kinds of sense gratification for your sake. So, if Krishna's words are like arrows of indifference, the gopis' words are like arrows, hot arrows of retaliation, trying to convince Krishna of one simple thing. Please accept us. We have come to you as your lovers. Please accept us. 32. Oh, dear Krishna. As an expert in religion, you have advised us that the proper religious duty for women is to faithfully serve their husbands, their children, and their other relatives. We agree that this principle is valid. But actually, this service should be rendered to you. After all, O Lord, you are the dearmost friend of all embodied souls. You are the most intimate relative. And indeed, you are the very self. You are the supersoul in everyone's heart. You are the closest to us. You have the most intimate relationship. There is an expression in English that blood is thicker than water. That in other words, other relationships come and go, but the relationships of family and relatives, these are the ones that you can rely on. So you have instructed us to go back and serve those people who we can actually rely on, our relatives, because they are closest to us. But, O Lord, who is closer to us than you. You are within our hearts. You are our very self. You are our dearmost friend. You are the dearmost friend of everyone, of every embodied soul. You are the most intimate. So therefore, your instruction to serve our relatives, because our relatives are most intimate with us, is actually true, because you are our absolute relative. You are the most intimate with us, and therefore, following your words, we wish to serve you. Srila Srila Swami comments in text 32. Furthermore, what was said by you about our husbands, our children, and so on, here's our comment on that. Here is our return of your arrow with our own specially sharpened arrow. You, the great knower of religion, we will tell you some religious principles. We speak ironically. Let this instruction you gave about husbands, children, and so on be applied to the real object of instruction, yourself. How he is the real object of instruction is stated by the word Isha. Isha means? The idea being that we find through the statement of various logical disputants that all ethical instructions ultimately point to the supreme control. How he is this Isha is stated in the words, Atma Akhila Bhavan. You are the enjoyer of everything enjoyable. The Atma is the Isha. Thus, you are also the dearmost and the real relative. You are the absolute relative. Other relatives, they change. As we change our body, we change our relatives, but we never change our relationship with Krishna. This means, let whatever is due to all different friends and relatives, let it be offered to you. And then he gives some alternative explanations that are also as wonderful. Inasmuch as you are acting as the abode of all instruction on religion, or in other words, the giver of instructions on religion, and we are also, in the sense, the inquirers, because you're instructing us, so therefore we're inquirers into instructions on religion, what you have spoken, we grant that what you have spoken are true, but you are not simply the giver of instructions. You are the Atma. You are the soul that is meant to be served. And then, the instructions you have spoken to apply to ordinary men we see in this world, but they do not apply to you, because you are the Supreme Master. You are the Isha. They say this with pitiful irony. You are the Atma, the very goal of all embodied beings. Why are you instructing us like this? They're saying it from so many different points of view. They are so clever, but their intention is only one. They're using philosophy. They're using argument. They're using morality. But their own aim is one, just to be with Krishna and serve him and love him in the conjugal mood. This religious duty you have described of rendering service to husbands and other relatives should actually be applied to you. Why? Because you are the Upadeshapad. You are the underlying foundation of the existence of those husbands and so on who are being you're instructing us about that we should personally serve. It is you who is giving them, you're the basis on which their existence rests. So therefore, we should serve the basis of them, which is you. Without you, no one's husband or other relatives can even exist. The rest of the verse can be interpreted in the same way, Srila Swami says, as the first explanation. Let us avoid too much elaboration. Also, another point either he made and I missed, or Vishwanath will make later on, where he says, but you are not... You're advising us, instructing us to serve our husbands and relatives, and because you are giving us our instructions, you are not just our friend, therefore you are our guru. And because you are our guru, our first duty is to serve you. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. This verse is spoken by some of the more guileless gopis, hoping to defeat Krishna with his own statements. What does guile mean?
Deceptive.
In other words, they're simple-hearted. So they're using his words to defeat him. They're simple. So different gopis are speaking different words because they all have different moods. And why do they all have different moods? Yes, but why do they have different moods?
They're different personalities.
They're different personalities. Why are they different personalities? Huh? Yes. Because you have to think about the reflection here. The young boy wants to enjoy many young girls, and not all exactly the same. He wants to enjoy this one who has blackish hair, and one who has blonde hair, and one who's always very serious, and one who's very expert, and one who's always laughing, and one who's always doing this, and different moods. So where does that come from? That comes from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this is the essence of the spiritual world. It is not qualityless. It is not varietyless. It is full of unlimited varieties. And all the varieties are required so that someone can enjoy. And guess who the enjoyer isn't? It's not any one of us, no offense or anything, it's not me, it's him, it is Krishna. He is the one that all of existence is meant to serve. All of existence is meant to give him, not me, pleasure. And that reacts very unfavorably. Of course, when I'm giving the Bhagavatam class, I have to say it very strongly, but usually that will interact very unfavorably with my consciousness because I have a false ego, a very healthy false ego that wants to place me as the center and all the varieties of material existence as the props for my enjoyment. This is called Maya. And because that brings distress, the attempt, the false attempt to be the center of existence, the illusory attempt, because I'm obviously not the center of existence, because that brings so much distress to the soul who is desiring happiness, it brings him unlimited distress, and the more he desires to enjoy the varieties of this world, the more distress it brings him. The renunciants, the jnani's proposal, therefore there is no variety. In the material world or in the spiritual world, everything is one. Qualityless, varietyless. But what about the variety? I don't know much about the spiritual world, but I certainly perceive variety in the material world. Well, what about that variety? Don't worry. It is just illusion. It is not actually there. That's quite a philosophy, that everything that you perceive has no existence, in fact. It is just illusion. If you think about it, it takes a lot of faith to believe that. That this doesn't really exist. That I don't really exist. That you don't exist. That your computer doesn't exist. The pillar doesn't exist. Nothing exists except the chapatis and dal I need to eat. That I have to be very serious about, but everything else is illusion. So, but that's to the extent that Maya goes to create a philosophy different from the fact that there is one supreme enjoyer, controller, and everything in existence is meant to serve that one center of Krishna. Maya will do anything to give us any excuse to avoid that one conclusion, that I'm an insignificant servant of Krishna. We shall make our attempt. Oh, this is a 32. It's a long one, too. Guileless gopis hope to defeat Krishna with his own statements. Later we're going to go to the gopis that are not guileless, that are less simple, and they're angry. The brother gopis said, how is it that the gopis can get angry at Krishna? Because he's the supreme God, and if you get angry at God, you're going to get into trouble. He's going to throw a thunderbolt at you or something like that. This is on a different level. The brother gopis said, you have said that a woman's duty is to serve her husband and other relatives. This remains valid as far as it applies, and we have no argument against this. We have been doing that all the time. In what way? We are always engaged in serving you, the originator of instructions on Dharma that is meant for us. This is in accordance to the reasoning that first one should serve the Acharya who teaches Dharma, and then one should execute the instructions given. So our first duty, you're instructing us so nicely in Dharma and morality and proper religiosity. Therefore, our first duty is to serve the Acharya who has given us these instructions, and that is you. The scriptures state that only by following the Acharya without duplicity can one's religious duties be successfully prosecuted. Furthermore, if the Acharya is the Supreme Lord himself, how much more we should follow. On account of your being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you are also the soul of all embodied beings. On account of your being the Supreme Soul, you are also the dearmost. And because of being the dearmost, you are one's true relative. In other words, the scriptures say that the wife should serve the Paramatma who resides within one's husband and others. And when the Paramatma leaves, the body is taken out of the house and burned on the riverbank. Therefore, by following you, who are the personal manifestation of the Paramatma, the following of one's husband and other relatives is automatically accomplished. What they've done is they've taken Krishna's arrow and just reflected it back and turned it back so that same arrow is shooting at him. What need do we have of other husbands and relatives who are devoid of their souls because they stand in opposition to our following you? They'll say anything, the Brajakopikas will talk. They'll do anything to please Krishna. And have already, they are in opposition to you and have already had their faces burned in the funeral pyre. The characteristic of prema mentioned in the Narada Pancharatna and other scriptures are explained in Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu. Prema constantly manifests natural symptoms, both hot and cold, which reflect the devotee's simultaneous experience of both union with and separation from the Lord. Prema that is due to the waves of bliss brings about tears, shivering, and other symptoms in the body. So here is some tattva. Srila Rupa Goswami says in Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu, if Brahmananda, the bliss of merging in the Brahman effulgence, will multiply 100 trillion times, this is what to speak of kamutya nyaya, what to speak of what we take as pleasurable in this world. This is the bliss of Brahmananda multiplied by 100 trillion times. It would still not equal even an atomic fragment of the ocean of transcendental bliss felt in devotional service. This verse indicates that the bliss tasted in devotional service is infinitely greater in magnitude than the bliss of Brahman. The pain experienced by the premi bhakta during separation, varaha, from Krishna burns with more brilliance than millions of sun rays. This, all-illuminating sun of separation reveals all of Krishna's beautiful transcendental qualities, including those related to Krishna's opulence, Aishwarya Guna, as well as those related to his sweetness, his Madhurya Guna. There's some technical, very interesting, intellectually wonderful points made here, and I kind of doubt we're going to have the time to go into them in their wonder. But this is the experience of devotion and separation. It does not cover any of Krishna's qualities. So devotion and separation reveals Krishna's Aishwarya and his Madhurya. Devotion in sambhog, meeting and separation. Now in meeting with Krishna, his opulence remain revealed. We must assume, devotion and union, sambhoga, on the other hand, is more pleasure-giving than millions of nectar-filled moonbeams. So one is scorching, separation is scorching, and reveals Krishna's Aishwarya and his Madhurya, but prem with Krishna in meeting is soothing like moon rays. And reveals only those qualities of Krishna which manifest his tasty sweetness, his Madhurya. So prema in separation is one thing, all on the level of transcendental ecstatic emotion, and prema on the level of meeting is another. One reveals Aishwarya and Madhurya, and meeting reveals tasty sweetness, as it's translated here, just his Madhurya. Since direct association with Krishna is like the nectar rays of the moon, that intoxicating nectar covers Krishna's Aishwarya, his opulence. Now what do we have here though? Are they with Krishna or meeting him, or are they separated from Krishna? Yes. But in a case when even in union or meeting with Krishna, his opulence remain revealed, we must assume that the devotee's love is not yet mature. So if in meeting Krishna, there's still traces of Krishna's opulence, that means his love is not yet mature. So what is prema shrinks or becomes less perfect during union or meeting if Krishna's opulence, Aishwarya, is revealed. Although in this instance the gopis are meeting with Krishna, they are expecting separation, and thus they have a realization of Krishna's Aishwarya caused by their perfectly pure love. So because they're saying that he's the super soul, right? So because they're saying that he's the super soul, it doesn't mean that they're experiencing his opulences, and therefore that meeting him, and therefore that their prema is immature. Because they're expecting separation, his opulence are coming. They have a realization of Krishna's Aishwarya caused by their perfectly pure love. This is the mysterious workings of prema itself. Even when love is imperfect, it reveals Krishna's glories, then what to speak of when it is completely perfect? Thus the magnitude of the gopis' experience of Krishna's greatness is the measure of the greatness of their love. And then the last paragraph, the last little part of Vishnu's purport, comment, and then we shall end and release you all into the wonderful world of Braja. The Braja gopis' ecstatic love, their prema for Sri Krishna, is the most exalted love. But love mixed with awareness of Krishna's power and opulence, Aishwarya Gyan, is not the most exalted. And the gopis, even those, these quote, guileless gopis, are filled with pure love, perfected pure love. Okay. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Too late. What to do? Too late.
That's a very important question.
some undoubtedly an insignificant soul. Okay, but I'll have to give it a very, very... I won't be able to give it its the full depth of answer that it requires, probably.
An insignificant answer, if you like.
That's all I'm capable of, undoubtedly.
It's
Saksad Hari. He's speaking about it from that point of Saksad Hari. Because Saksad means directly Hari. So he's speaking from that point, that of the point of non-difference between the spiritual master and Hari. Because of the transparency meaning. And it's making, and he's making, he's explaining that the indirect authority, see, because everyone who's an authority in this world, from the husband to or the mother or the father or the king or the teacher, all the authorities in this world, they're actually representatives of God. And it's psychologically unhelpful when these persons are corrupt and therefore their authority is lost. Because a proper society provides these indirect representatives of God with authority, with some of the power of the Supreme Lord, so that psychologically the effect of that is on two levels. One level, that society functions properly when these persons are qualified and they're respected. God's mercy comes through them on a certain level, but it's on a certain indirect level. And also it provides a proper psychological framework so that one, a soul who is brought up in such a culture, trusts authority. So therefore it's much easier for him to surrender to the authority of God. But yet, those authorities are indirect because they're not necessarily speaking directly about the Supreme Lord, while the spiritual master is speaking directly about the Supreme Lord. So therefore, the point that he's making in 32, so that's why one is direct and one's indirect, and they're both authorities. So the point is that all the indirect authorities who are not speaking about the Lord become obsolete when one is directly in touch with the Absolute Truth. So those, for the purpose of serving and pleasing the Supreme Lord, sometimes the indirect authorities have to be neglected to please the direct authority. That's the point. Okay, it's over for today. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur ki jai. Srila Srila Swami ki jai. Sri Gaur Nitai ki jai. Sri Krishna Balaram ki jai. Sri Radhasama Sundar ki jai. Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Sri Vrindavan Dham ki jai.